You're listening to Counterculture on RCR.
Reality Check Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Counterculture here on Reality Check Radio with Marie. Ah, it's been a day. And when you've had a bit of a day, sometimes you need to get uplifted. And one of the beautiful things after Counterculture, of course, is the wonderful, fabulous Natalie Cutler-Welsh is here to uplift us on Reality Check Radio. So I've just stolen you for a little bit of time before your show to have a chat and a catch-up and just talk about some of the things that sort of sit in my patch, which can leave you feeling a bit deflated and not seeing the wood for the trees. So I thought we could chew fat about that today. How are you, Nat?
I'm good. Yeah, let's do it. I know it's funny. It's my show is known as the kind of go-to if you want to feel better about the world, but I know a lot of things about a lot of things, and I'm more than happy to chime in on some of the more nitty-gritty topics that I don't always talk about or ever talk about on my show.
No, and there's been so much going on. And one of the things I found with this job, and I guess for you, because yours has more been an extension of what you've always done, whereas for me, I read a lot in the culture space just for my own reading, but I never really dive into things any deeper. And I dive into a lot of topics which are very dark and just so horrific that sometimes you sit there and you think to yourself, gosh, I just need to give myself a mental break on that. But there are also ways and tips to do that. So, for example, around the gender debate, before I entered into this, I knew very little about it. And it's really heating up now. And so much of it is tied in and around the mental health of those that are affected, as well as the family members and those of us talking about it. How do you look at it from a spiritual perspective?
Well, I do look at it slightly as a play on or a slightly an attack on the population. So in terms of divisiveness, so dividing people from each other, dividing specifically families, disempowering parents, confusing youth, so teenagers and 20-somethings and even primary school kids because of what they're teaching. Some schools, not all, are teaching in schools. So I'm very concerned about it. It's not something I have direct connection with, meaning no one close in my life is walking that path or questioning things actively. But I have a massive concern for humanity, and I have a massive concern for society going forward. So from a spiritual perspective, I would say we need to be onto it. We as parents or caregivers or grandparents, godparents, aunties and uncles, is to really ask the questions of what are they teaching and why? And I think part of it is around confusion and division, because when you have people confused and divided, they are disempowered and therefore more easy to control.
So interesting you say that, because one of the things I think you brought up there is in terms of parenting, you know, as parents, we've been conditioned for years to abrogate our responsibility and hand that over to someone else, whether that be educators or the state. Have that trust. We've had that chain of trust with those people that they have the best intentions for our children. And I know for me, all of a sudden it was a bolt from the blue to realize that that wasn't always the case. Did you, have you come up against that as in your, you know, mum world?
Yeah, I think, you know, as a parenting author myself and a podcaster back in the day, all around parenting and a mother of three teenagers, I feel like in a positive way, I feel like the days of doctor knows best, teacher knows best are dwindling. They're not gone. There still are a lot of people, a high percentage of the population that still think like, oh, I'm sick, I'll go to the doctor and I'll do what they say. But there's a lot more of us now. And same thing with the teacher. Oh, well, the teacher taught this, so it must be right. You know, they told us this in history, so it must be true. And now it's laughable. It is. And I'm excited for the time when there's more of a critical mass, more of us. And that's why I'm talking a bit about consciousness rising or the awakening, whatever you want to call it, where people actually start to go, hey, wait a minute. And they start to really see the connections of going, you know, actually, I don't really think that everything my doctor says, it's really time for me to hone in on what I think is best for me and my body. And same thing, it's time for me to hone in as a parent on what I think is best for my child. And what are they actually being taught? Let me dive a little deeper into that rather than how was your day? Here's your snack.
As a parent now, I mean, you've got teens, I've got teens. What's the big difference you see from when we were parenting our kids through primary school to we're parenting to our kids now? Because I'm seeing that shift in norms, and the gender debate is a big one that has just sort of almost appeared to have come out of nowhere after COVID. If you're aware and you're alert to what was going on, you would have seen it prior. But for most parents, this has come like a bolt out of the blue. Have you seen any other things sort of crop up during that time as well?
Yeah, well, I think it's gone from, you know, sex education to sexual education. And that's very different. And I think, you know, when we were growing up back in the day, I grew up in Canada. I went to school there and university, and then I came over to New Zealand. But I think I guess maybe more wholesome, you know, playing games in the street after school and biking to the local park. And I know kids still do those things, which is amazing. But the phone, obviously, the internet is something that is dominant in so many lives now. And me, I'm a business owner. I use it for my work. It's a huge part of what I do. But I know it's also infiltrated and to a certain extent has a role in the indoctrination or the shaping of children's minds in terms of what they're consuming. So yeah, it's absolutely a different landscape than we grew up in. I don't know how old you are, but I'm turning 51 in September. And yeah, it's a different world. But I do feel positive if we look forward and let's just say even hopefully in 6 months' time, you know, by early 2025, I think a lot will have changed in the way that we view the world and the way that we view ourselves as humanity. So I'm feeling optimistic about that.
Yeah, I'm feeling optimistic about that too. And I'm feeling optimistic as well with the teenagers that I have that come through this house and talking to them, because you know how every generation has a tendency to rebel a little bit against the one previous. I'm seeing a little bit that now, you know, the millennials sort of push back against us Gen Xers, and I'm 52, I'll be 53 early next year. Then you sort of had the Zoomers that are very much, they've taken woke to a place that even old school, you know, liberals are finding it too woke for them. And I covered that in a story last week. But this next group, our kids group, I'm seeing them, especially the boys, saying, they're seeing through it. Like they're seeing the fact that the emperor has no clothes and they don't want any part of it. And that, for me, I find incredibly hopeful.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a lot of direct connection with this. I mean, one of my children goes to a private school, and I think they don't get quite the same level of the sexual education that they're getting at some of the other schools. The school that my boys go to is a public school, and that's the one I'm kind of keeping my eye on a little more. Plus, they're younger, so they've got more years ahead of them. But we live, it's interesting in my household, because we don't discuss these things so freely, because most of my listeners know, my husband and I see absolutely polar opposite on all of the things. And so as a result, we don't really discuss a lot of things. Like a lot of topics are, I wouldn't say off the table, but it can get contentious. And so we tend to just stick to logistics of sports and, you know, getting together, you know, with my family in Wellington later in the year. And we just stick to, I guess, old school conversations, because we don't talk about the pivotal topics of the day. Because we see things so differently. And you know, we can sometimes bring conversations to the fore and share some views, but we're still not at the point where it's a positive conversation to be having as a family. So that's tricky. And if anyone else out there listening is in a similar boat where you and your partner are on very different pages on any of the issues of the day, whether it be, you know, the Ukraine, the American election, riots over in Europe, climate change, quote unquote, you know, any of the things, it can be tricky to navigate that as a conversation, as a family. You kind of want to talk about those things. But at the same time, I don't. You know, at the same time, I'm very much let kids be kids. I'm very much, I just want my kids to know about and care about things that within their realm of, you know, being healthy and being happy and having really positive, meaningful friendships and experiences that they're going to remember. I don't think we need to be discussing the issues of the day and the concerns of the world with them personally, because they get so much of that at school and online if they want it, that I like home to be a place where they can just be themselves and do some of the things we did as kids.
Yeah. Yeah. And in person too. Like I spend a lot of time encouraging in-person contact with their friends. And we have a sort of a dual city situation here. I mean, Auckland is spread out. I mean, getting from point A to point B is difficult at the best of times up there. We, with the twin cities that we've got here, we live in one, our sons go to school in the other, their friends are spread out all over. I will work really hard to allow them to spend time with their friends in person. I'd much rather they do that. And you know, I mean, you've got two sons. The conversations, I mean, it's absolute rubbish and smack talk, but that's what teenage boys do, is they get around and talk teenage boy banter and rubbish. And I'd much rather they do that in person all day long than be communicating through a phone or a screen.
Yeah, I often will drive them a group of, you know, we've got a family wagon, so we just fill it up with all the teenagers and we drive them to their band practice. And it's great. I mean, they're in a band, you know, one of them writes their own songs and it's great. They're doing something together, making music, being creative. Sometimes they'll use tech, you know, when they playing around with editing and things like that, which I think is great. It's with a purpose. And so that's really positive. But I agree. Like sometimes they're just in the car and they're having their conversations and it's just, you know, you're just a mom, you're listening to it, and it's all part of their journey in this interesting time that they, all of us, but specifically those teens, are navigating through.
Yeah, definitely a navigation. Speaking of navigating, one of the things my Marty and I talked about in Media Matters last week was just watching sort of the cascade of a lot of events that are all sort of unfolding at the same time. So you've got, obviously, there's been, since October 11, there's been the unrest in the Middle East. We've had the Russian-Ukraine go on for a few years. But since then, there's been a cascade. There's been volatility in the financial markets. There has been more uprisings now in Europe. A heap of protests across Europe, first like with farmers, then with a lot of people trying to hold on to national identity. You've had riots with the pro-Palestinian marches. There's been unrest around Islamic causes, all of that across Europe. You've then, Bangladesh have had a little coup of their own, that the moderate Muslim leadership has now been ousted by a more radical faction, and you've had a cleansing of Hindus in that country. No one in legacy media seems to want to talk about that. And then what's been going on in the UK, and that's even before we get to the assassination attempt and the shenanigans in North America. It can be quite overwhelming if you're somebody that's consuming content, looking at all of these things, looking at the things that mainstream or legacy media don't feed you. It can be quite an overwhelming place. Mm. I have to admit, I put myself on little mini micro digital diets because you just can't take it all in. I find it just quite draining on my soul. How do you tackle that sort of stuff?
Well, I really have five words that cover all of that for me, which is the breakdown before the breakthrough. And that's a phrase that we use in the world of personal discovery and personal development. It's when someone, you know, you got hit rock bottom, yeah, before you can turn your life around, whether you're an addict or you're realizing something that happened in your life, you're working through a limiting belief. So we use the phrase the breakdown before the breakthrough. But I really think that is applicable to any and all of those things you mentioned. So for me, I don't get overly consumed with, oh my goodness, did you hear about this? And did you see that that's happening? And I'm sure that it is, but I'm also pretty sure that some of the stuff that we see is not accurate, meaning crisis actors, meaning a propaganda. And so I take everything with a grain of salt. And so I feel like a strategy for not getting overwhelmed is to be aware, but not anxious. To be prepared, but not paranoid. And so I'm talking about, like, when I say be prepared, what am I talking about? I'm like, well, some people might have heard whisperings over the past 3 years of, you know, an upcoming date, 10 days of darkness. What does that mean? Well, maybe it means that we're literally going to lose power for 10 days. So you might want to have your gas tank and on your barbecue filled up and some cash in the drawer, like 300. Right? Or maybe it means 10 days of darkness that we're just not going to have the internet because they're going, you know, the banking system is going to be reset or whatever. I mean, we've heard different things. So I'm saying let's be prepared, but not paranoid. And so let's be aware, but not anxious. And so my I guess, overarching philosophy or perspective is good things are coming, but the current system we're in and have been in for hundreds of years no longer serves humanity, and our consciousness is rising, like the way that we're meant to be living. We're not really meant to be exhausted and you know, paycheck to paycheck and working so hard. That's not really how humanity's meant to live. And when I say on my show, we are far more powerful than we realize, and most people have heard that phrase, well, we are. We've just been numbed down and dumbed down for so long that we have no idea. And so I feel like it is an exciting time coming. It is the breakdown before the breakthrough. And I'm talking the financial system. I'm talking socially, you know, in terms of cultures in, you know, riots in the UK. And yes, some of that is true. Some of it might be misrepresented. You know how they can do deep fakes and stuff with videos and things. So you really need to take things with a grain of salt. And also visualizing what you truly want to happen in terms of your own life, as well as the big picture for humanity, does play a role, I believe, as well.
So interesting you say that. I love that breakdown before the breakthrough. What you described, we saw here in a smaller element during Cyclone Gabrielle, because we had this weather event that we knew was coming. Many of us prepared, but it was much more catastrophic than many had feared. And there were some tinkerings that, so places that normally would never have been affected were affected and so on. We had then no power. Most of the region had no power for at least 6 days, moving up to many weeks. So there was a level of preparedness there that some had and some hadn't had. And but the togetherness, like when you all of a sudden are forced to disconnect and you actually have to connect with those, you had micro-size everything down to the neighbours in your street, actually was a great recentering. And we were fantastic. We have a great relationship with the people up and down our street. But I saw a connection in our neighbourhood that has, you know, persisted to this day. And it was that sort of, you had the breakdown in the sense that you had the event, and then everyone pulled together. And it shows you how powerful things like that become. And it doesn't, it could be personal or it could be external. So, yeah. I find for me, I liked the classic serenity prayer that I know that they use a lot for Alcoholics Anonymous and the like. You know, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And I think there's a bit of that going on now, that control what we know we can change, but actually be aware that the stuff out there that we can't, that we can be, as you said, aware of it, but not absorbed by it or ruled by it.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because on one hand, when we talk about the gender issues and the propaganda and the push that's going on with that, we don't want to be like, oh, well, all will be well. Like, sometimes we do want to step in. We do want to grab our bow and arrow and go in and you know, like, you know, we want to be prepared for some sort of, you know, battle, like metaphorical, right? So we want to go to a student teacher meeting, talk to, like, ask them or email and say, what exactly are you teaching the kids? And other times, like the global events and issues, yes, we want to be prepared with the cash and the petrol and the water supply of water, clean water, ready to go, and all the things. And I come from the Christchurch earthquake as well. So same thing, neighbors finally meeting each other for the first time. It's, gosh, humanity baffles me. But at the same time, we don't want to let it consume us such that we go into a state of overwhelm and anxiety, because that, as we know, stress causes breakdown in the body, and we need our health more than anything.
Yeah. What are some of the things for you that are bubbling along on the horizon that you think, I need to be aware of this, but I also need to manage my expectations around it?
Well, I guess for me, looping back to my personal situation where I've been kind of waiting and hoping for the last 3 years for something big enough to happen so that my beloved sees that all is not as it seems in the world. And all is not right. And it's not really all about climate change and carbon emissions and such. So, but, you know, so I guess in a one way, I'm kind of sitting on my hands waiting, but he's also waiting for me to realize that I'm wrong about all these things too. So it's a fascinating juxtaposition to be in. So I am I'm at this point of being fascinated by humanity, as I always am. And if I wasn't, I would be more stressed and more sad about the whole state of the world. But because I maintain this genuine fascination. I don't get really caught up in the politics of things. Like, sure, I can talk to you about the American election. Like, no problem. I have things to say. But at the same time, I feel like certain events will happen that will lead us, humanity, to a better place of realizing that we don't need to be controlled and that we are more powerful and, you know, more ideally, we will be more sovereign than we have been and more abundant. Like, people are really struggling and really suffering. So there's going to be some massive shifts, I think, even financially, which I'm excited about. I know some people are nervous about like a financial crash. And I'm thinking, no, things have to change. We can't go on the way we've been.
No. One of the things I've always maintained from the culture space, because a lot of culture war issues for the longest time were completely most people were oblivious of all of them. And so was I. So I fell into the camp. You become aware of them when it's like when you stand in a dog turd, you know, all of a sudden the stink follows you around and then you become acutely aware that something is not right. So as you said, the waking up moment. What I'm seeing now is that interestingly enough, the gender debate was one that rattled a few parental cages and a few parents sort of woke up to that, particularly dads, and became more aware of, if this is going on, what else is going on that I've missed? I look at also what's happening in the United Kingdom right now, and the media really honing down, you know, and it's not helped when your new prime minister calls people far-right thugs. But there has been an unrest bubbling along in the United Kingdom now for years and years, and there have been people calling it out, but most Brits have been at home going, look, if I can't smell a stench, I'm not going to worry about it. I haven't stepped in this, I'm just going to leave it alone. And that silence has created compliance to let things move in, and then that tipping point has happened. And then finally, a number of them, I saw a sign that summed it up for me was not far right, just fed up.
Yeah.
And they're now fed up. So if you're that person and you finally stumbled across us because you've gotten fed up, that flow of information, it can be overwhelming, I think, to somebody who is just waking up to all these things going on. How do you tackle that?
Yeah. As you highlighted, you know, it'll take certain issues will resonate more with others, right? So some people, it'll be the money thing that'll the financial crash, I need to get some Bitcoin or I need to buy some gold. It'll be that'll be the thing. And for other people, it might be the transgender thing or the different, you know, the cultures and immigration. So, or someone else, it might be the climate change, the climate change messaging. So I think the key is for people not to get consumed about all of the things, but maybe take one thing that they genuinely care about or know about. Maybe it's an area of study or an area from their previous career. And now suddenly they're viewing it differently. Suddenly they're like, oh my goodness, actually, maybe I could be, you know, I work for a wind farm company. Maybe I'm part of the problem or whatever. Like, they have a moment of realization. Maybe it's how can they positively influence things in one or two areas, not to be overwhelmed and consumed by all of the things, all of the areas and all of the possibilities, because they're all possibilities. We don't really know the truth. I mean, I really believe we have not been told the truth about history, his story. But I don't really know what the truth of history is. It could be this, but it also could be that. But I'm willing to ask the question. I'm willing to be wrong. But I'm certainly not willing to just take what I'm told and swallow it and carry on with my day anymore.
Well, as they always say, history is written by the victor.
Yeah.
One of the words that I think we've forgotten how to use, and we need to take ourselves back to our toddler time, and that is the power of no. I think no actually is quite an empowering word, and we've forgotten how to use it. What are your thoughts on the power of no?
Well, in my coaching, when I work with people, I talk about making a no list. You know, what are the things? And we even do this. I know people aren't really on video, but make your arms into an X and you kind of really like open that, you know, and you pull that X down. And it's basically, what are you done with? What are you no longer willing to tolerate in your life? What no longer serves you? What, you know, right? So the power of no, absolutely, possibly in a different context than what you're talking about. But for me, it's around boundaries, and it's around, you know, what will you no longer accept or tolerate or stand for in your life? And by the way, what do you stand for? You know, so we can start asking these questions of ourselves, but sometimes people don't know what they want, but they know what they don't want. And so it's kind of an easy place for people to really revisit their values and revisit who they are, or rediscover, I would say, or even reinvent who they are as things are unfolding. It's like, no, what am I saying no to? I am no longer going to let people tell me, you know, what I can and can't say at a meeting or on social media. Although we do have obviously rules about what that's part of our things that we're concerned about is free speech. But I think the power of no is massive. What was the context that you were thinking?
Well, and the power of the whole in-group, out-group scenario especially is that people will often self-censor something that they want to say or something that they believe that they disagree with because of what the group has gone along with, because you've been conditioned and groomed that it's everything for the greater good is where you must be. So it's that classic, is it the Milgram experiments, you know, where that whole, no, this is what this is, you know, this is the, you pick the two lines and you know what the right answer is, but you go along with the group because that's, you think, you question yourself. And I think there's been a lot of that, and we're not backing ourselves to trust our inner voice, a voice that is probably for many people now screaming at them of the things that are just not right. And that internal conflict surely can't be healthy for any individual.
I think it will be dialing up, you know, especially as things are shifting. And I'll get a little woo here, but, you know, spiritually, energetically, frequency-wise, as things are shifting at, going forward, and as we come to the end of 2024, a lot of people will have this inner knowing that they've never really listened to before. And now, they, like, in terms of mental health even, they'll be perplexed going, oh my gosh, I've always thought this thing, but now they're starting to connect more with their intuition and their inner beliefs. And so for a lot of people, theirs will strengthen and it was already strong, and other people, it'll be quite a new experience to start listening to themselves and then having the courage to up their brave and actually let the words flow out of their mouth. And the words might be, you know, no, like, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm not going to teach that anymore because I don't even believe that content. And so having the courage to actually speak and say no is massive. It's going to be really challenging for people.
And especially to those who are in perceived authority. So whether that be a teacher or a medical professional or someone that you're working with, you're a superior at work, to be able to go, no, I'm not going to do that. Or I'm not comfortable doing that. This is why. And actually using your logic to be able to express how you feel, because the appetite for compliance, and this was one of the things with the COVID lockdowns, which stunned me, is how autonomous and compliant we just instantly became.
Yeah.
And anybody that spoke out against it was demonized so viciously that people just sort of closed off. And I think that there is a hangover from that for many people, and they're just beginning now to refine their voices.
Yeah. And we're ready for that. I mean, it's people's innate and ingrained fear of what other people will think of them. That, I think, is the biggest barrier to people not showing up in the world as the true version of themselves, you know, being who they are. And it's so ironic that the transgender movement is like, you know, I just want to be myself. It's like, yeah, but that's not who you are. So I think that, yeah, a lot of the reason there was so much compliance, and I'm from Canada originally, and we're a very compliant nation as well, is we just don't want to do the wrong, we don't want to get in trouble. We just want to be good. But now I think people are slowly starting to realize that if they actually listen to what felt right for them, and like you said, safety in numbers, people don't want to stand out. But the more people, especially as the energies are shifting and more people are awakening, the more people that have the courage to say, actually, I'm not going to teach that anymore, or a doctor saying, I'm not going to prescribe that anymore, or whatever, it will have a ripple effect. Just for me, slower than I'd hope.
Yeah, it is slower. And then just recently, did you see Dominic Perrottet as he's heading out of office, says, oh, I was wrong to do the vaccination mandates in Australia. Oh, yeah. I mean, talk about win the gold medal for a dollar short and a day late. I don't think we'll ever see that in this country. I think that there is too much political capital tied up in appearances of piousness. You know, that whole critical theory notion of virtue, which they've gone and placed particularly on that side of politics, for me is astounding. And they will not be humble and admit any form of mistake.
Yeah, well, I think admission, yeah, would be great. But yeah, someone having admission on their way out the door is one thing. It's like, okay, nice timing. But I don't know if we'll have admission, but I think we might have... We might have, you know, people, some truth being revealed. So we might have revelation. So we might have some truth being revealed that removes some people from their roles, whether they admit wrong or not. But I guess we'll just wait and see.
So I'm very fortunate that my husband and I are pretty much in simpatico with a lot of the things, that, particularly around COVID and the big wider issues. So we're very much on the same page. I would hate to think if we weren't, you know, that would be really tough for us. So I really give you a huge amount of credit for being able to navigate with your beloved, not having very, very differing views. One of the things that we do often have quite vigorous debates about is the upcoming commission inquiry around the COVID response. He takes a vastly more hardline approach to it than I do. I mean, he would be very happy to see Nuremberg 2.0, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So he wants a very clear signal sent both here in New Zealand and in the wider community that this must never happen again as they did first time round. Whereas I'm trying to say to him, well, this, as you said, there may be learnings and some revelations that come out of this inquiry, but I think we need to brace ourselves that we may not even get, there may even not even be anything remotely looking like an apology, whilst the perpetrators who stood on the sidelines and either actively participated or said nothing and let things go on are still holding seats of power. What are your thoughts around that?
I think whatever the outcome, it will still have the same effect of having more people awaken. So when I say awaken, I know that will trigger some people, but what I mean is more people have a realization that the government isn't necessarily well-intended, or the history we've been told is not actually accurate, or the things they're teaching in school is not align with proper values and you know, things like that. So I feel like whether it, and I would love it to be, you know, I filled out my COVID form submission. I interviewed people in the inquiry sessions. I'm all over it. And that's a kind of a 3D perspective. That's like, what can we do in the here and now? We can sign this form. We can protest. Okay. That's what I mean. 3D in the real world. Those are things you can do. And either something amazing is going to come of that, or probably not enough, not what we want, not strong enough, not firm enough, not enough admission or fault or accountability will take place. And that will be frustrating for some people. But more people will awaken to the realization that we've been wronged or had, you know, misrepresented, misconception, as well as misinformation. What about the missed information is more relevant? And that will awaken more people. Like the domino effect of that actually will be, I think, positive, even though we're not getting what we want. On the flip side, you know, if we do get what we want, again, more people will think, okay, well, this, you know, I feel more positive. We've been a little bit of redemption or a little bit of acknowledgement. So I think it will have the same effect, but in a different way. One will come from anger, going like, oh my goodness, they didn't acknowledge what they did, but it will result in more and more people awakening or realizing that things aren't as they seem, and a lot of things. So they'll start putting, you know, puzzle pieces together. Oh, it's not just the COVID and the medical and the health. It's actually, well, there's also been propaganda about this other thing. And there's also the way that things are connected. I think more people will start putting those things together, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah. You've alluded to it before around financial and not necessarily being scared by a financial collapse. In terms of things waking up, I've often maintained that the critical theory, which I believe is at a nub of a lot of this, that is the sort of seed in which this sour tree has grown, is an ideology of affluence. So it needs a very affluent environment in order to propagate and to spread and to infect, whether it be from culture, politics, or even compliance within a political sphere. If there is a financial crash, which then in turn creates financial hardship and people are having to rewire how they go about their everyday lives and be a bit more concerned about the comings and goings in terms of the financial well-being, especially in that affluent sphere, then there tends to be a tendency to wake up. Because I don't see people who currently are on the breadline or on the poverty line in this country worrying about pronouns. So it tends to be those who have more affluence. What are your thoughts around in terms of if there is a little bit more financial pressure for people, what are some of the positives they can take from
that? Yeah, I mean, it's financial pressure, but I'm hoping it's financial transformation, you know, or shift. It's a financial shift. So what we're looking at, hopefully, is that the way that we do money, right, from the fiat, you know, the fiat-backed system, we want to move, hopefully, back to a gold-backed system where inflation and, you know, more, there's so much disparity, right, in terms of wealth in the nations and the world. And back in the day, back in whatever it was, many, many years ago, when I studied at university, 1992 or 94, I studied international development and sustainability and third world studies. So all these things that some of the Green Party have kind of like changed the word sustainability is not what it is when I was studying it. But, you know, a lot of those countries have had such a hard time because they've basically been raped and pillaged and the inflation and everything. I feel like going forward that there's going to be a lot more equality. I mean, equality has become such a buzzword, but I think there's actually going to become more equality in terms of the countries and their wealth and not being raped and pillaged the way they were. I think that's an exciting prospect. In the short term, yes, it will be a big shock for people, especially people that have a lot of stocks and bonds and financial investments and savings accounts and things in the banking system, because I feel like the banking system was built kind of in a corrupt format, and the breakdown before the breakthrough. Things need to fall down before they can be recreated. And so I think it's smart for people. You know, a lot of people have been talking for years about having some gold or silver, like actual physical tangible gold and silver, as well as maybe having some crypto, you know, some Bitcoin. So just having some things, like doing a little bit of research in that space, having some cash, like I keep saying, cash in your drawer, but having, I don't know, $300 if you can. I mean, I don't have a lot of stocks and bonds, so I don't have a lot of things to lose. There's like, you know, there's not a lot of affluence going on. So I guess maybe that's part of me not being worried. Also, I'm an entrepreneur, so I know I can make money by doing different things. I sell essential oils. I'm a business coach. I have a job for the first time in 12 years. I work with the elderly. And so I've got some very helpful skills that can help a broad range of people. I think the key for people right now is adaptability, is to be adaptable both financially in terms of what you can, you know, maybe you can sell some items in your house if you want to, but just to be adaptable to what's coming down the pathway. Things are shifting and transforming, and it's scary. Because change is scary, but it can also be exciting. I'm excited to hear what your listeners have to say about all of that.
Well, I think that's a really great place to finish up. So what have you got coming up? Because, I mean, you need to get off and get to your show, my dear. But what have you got coming up for our listeners if they want to hang around and listen to get something to up their brave? What have you got on the show this week?
Well, I've got coming up, I've got Reese and Lexi, who I'm interviewing about addiction, because, you know, like a lot of people have been through hard times the way that the world is. A lot of people have been through like lots of many, many challenges. And sometimes it leads to addiction, whatever that might be, drugs, alcohol, sex, exercise, whatever, eating disorders. And so I'm chatting with them about different ways that people can really support themselves in terms of that area of addiction, as well as for people who want to support people going through addiction as well. And I've got an amazing interview up my sleeve, but you're going to have to tune in to hear that.
There you go. And it's been so good to catch up. We should do this again. This was fun. This is fun. It's been nice to sort of catch up and talk about lots of these different concepts from a different angle. If you have listened to this and you've not listened to Nat's show, you do definitely need to tune in. So just don't go anywhere. Go and make yourself a cup of tea, get settled back in, you know, and listen to Up Your Brave. And if you've got anything you want to share with either Nat or I, 2057 is the text number. Inbox@realitycheck.radio is the email. Any final thoughts for us, Nat, before you head off for your show?
Well, I just want to inspire people to, or invite them, I suppose, to really think about the five words I mentioned, the breakdown before the breakthrough. Like, it's all, everything's going to be okay. I don't want you to be complacent and do nothing, but I think sometimes if it feels all a bit much, and whatever you're looking at, whether it's the finances, the Olympics, the riots, I mean, I feel like it's all part of the consciousness rising. People, the greater awakening, if you're open to those terms, and it will all be better than it is, but we just have to go through this interesting time before we get there.
Well, on that note, thank you very much for joining me this morning. We've got a little bit of time first, though. I'm going to talk to Marty next with Media Matters, and then Nat will be along from 1 o'clock. So until then, thanks, Nat. I really do appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you so much.
Are you loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it, and right now they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.